At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, I'm here on a Sunday evening with my good friend Chris DePetrillo. We're going to talk some Cobra Kai. That'll probably be the majority of this podcast, but I do want to ask him what he's watching in pro wrestling these days, and also about someone who he's a big, big fan of, family friend as well, John Cena. John Cena's last year in WWE. Chris, what is going on?
What's up, man? This has been a long time coming. Glad I was able to catch up with you tonight.
By the way, how are you sitting with this like three part last season of Cobra Kai? As somebody who's like, show me everything, and then they only give us a third of the episodes right away. How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, part of me is glad they're spacing it out so that the end does not come too soon. But like you said, it's like, I want it now. I want to see what else we get. I want to see if we get some of these things that have been rumored for years to actually happen before the show decides to end. So I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I would like it all to just be right there, but I'm kind of glad they're stretching it out, because then at least it kind of prolongs the inevitable.
So before we even get to this part one of season six, I was like thinking, because we've talked about either every season or almost every season. I don't remember if we did get to season five or not, but just the idea that this thing is been out there since like 2018 is kind of crazy to me. Like, one of the focal points of this upcoming season, or this current season, is the specter of college. And I was like, wait, how old are these? When did we meet these kids? And now they're thinking about college. So that is in the back of my mind. I'm like, wow, it has actually been out for several years now. And it doesn't feel like it's been that long. But then again, you know, it came up for the pandemic, and I feel like everything that went through the pandemic just feels like it's, you know, it just feels like there's a weird timing. Like, the timeline of our lives is somehow adjusted during the pandemic in a weird way.
Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. Like, things that feel not that long ago feel so long ago, and vice versa. And the thing with Cobra Kai too is that we've had gaps from like a lot of the seasons, whether it was COVID times, or the most recent one was because of the strike last year. Right. So it's not even like we've been getting boom, 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 season after season. There have been gaps. So that kind of messes with the timeline too, because you're like, oh, that was just last season. That was 9 months ago, a year ago. And it's like, no, that was 2 years ago now.
Has it been 2 years? Was it 2 years between seasons?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy. I couldn't even think about it.
Silver.
Yeah.
It was late, like September 2022. I think it was like later in 2022. So almost exactly 2 years ago.
So before we even get into this latest season, I asked you, and I wanted to do this off the top of my head without any looking back or reading back. What are like some of your favorite moments of the series? I was able to immediately write down three of them, and they all have a very similar theme. I think my favorite moment is probably them bringing back Elizabeth Shue as Allie, because those two characters of, or actually the three characters of Daniel and Johnny and Allie, there's like 30 years apart, or more than 30 years apart of when the last time we saw them together, and they snapped right back into those characters like very easily. And I think that's my favorite moment of all of the 5 1/3 seasons so far, was just the ability to do that fan service of characters who we loved.
So I'm glad you mentioned that one, because that actually was one of mine, especially the way that night ends when she kind of gives Johnny the heart to heart.
Yeah.
And that kind of sets everything in motion for the finale of that season. But my favorite moment, and I tried not to get into like favorite fights and stuff like that, but I feel like, you know, with Cobra Kai, everything leads to a fight.
Everything's a fight.
I love that second season finale with the high school fight and just the buildup all the way through the end of the episode with, the very melancholy cover version of Cruel Summer. Mm-hmm. Johnny's all despondent. He ditches the car. I look like that last 10, 15 minutes. That is probably my favorite scene in the entire series.
And they would sort of use that style for other season finales where you get that like almost music video-esque montage building up to the end is a really cool way to do it. But that, so as I started thinking about it, as it turns out, my two other favorite moments also had to do with flashbacks and bringing back female characters. And so the reason why I think this works really well is because they have the license to use footage from the old movies. And so you're reminded of situations. And I think the Kumiko episode as well, going back to Okinawa and filming those scenes with her. Now, one of my friends is actually related to her. So I, even though I hadn't thought about Tamlin Tamita in years and years and years on a movie screen or on a television screen, my friend would talk about her as his cousin. So she was always in the back of my mind, and to see her again so many years later was awesome. But also you have the return of Chosen as a character in those scenes as well, making, there's a little bit of suspense and there's something there with him and Daniel, but you know that in order for that relationship to continue, they will have to be friends. But those early moments, you're like, ooh, there's still something there. And I can't wait to see what happens.
Bringing Chosen back, I mean, the way he balances being this badass, all-knowing sensei type of character and being the comic relief, at the same time. I mean, he's just doing a tremendous job.
Uncle Chosen. That's who he is. Yeah. He's just Uncle Chosen.
Yeah. What was it in the most recent season? Johnny's like, you're just here on a karate vacation. like their banter. William Zabka. He kills it as Johnny. I love him. But the banter, like the lines that they give him, and just like his delivery, it's great. And it's funny because you're talking about Chosen and Kumiko. I was leaning towards when they brought Silver back, mm-hmm. and not so much just like the sinister side of Silver, but to your point of how they use the flashbacks and everything to weave these people into the modern day story. I like how they took the criticism of Karate Kid Part 3 and made it a part of Silver's character, where they were talking about how Thomas Ian Griffith was, he was so over the top, and why is he fighting Daniel when Daniel's supposed to be like 17, 18, and he's like this like late 20s, early 30s guy.
Yeah.
And when he's talking to Kreese and Cobra Kai, he's like, I was high on cocaine. You had me fighting a high school kid. I thought that was brilliant. Like a nice little, meta humor nod to everything. I thought that was great.
I think it makes Karate Kid 3 better too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I love Karate Kid 3.
I saw Karate Kid 3 probably the day or the next day when it came out. Like, I have a fondness for those memories, but it obviously couldn't follow the footsteps of the first two films because those first two films were so good. My last one is, it's more of a series of things, but I know when this is happening, I'm going to enjoy it very well. It is like Johnny versus the internet, or Johnny versus anything modern day, and he's still kind of like someone who doesn't know how to use certain things, like when he has to become an Uber driver or whatever, or deliveries and stuff, where he's trying to figure out the phone thing, or when he's doing Google searches and he's trying to, any series of events relating to that, I think is the best humor of the entire series.
And when he goes to the pawn shop too, when he's always just having like back and forth with that guy, those scenes are always great too.
And I guess I should probably bring this up in that, For me, any scene with Amanda LaRusso is just my favorite thing in that episode. She's so good, and I love her. She's not on social media that much. She doesn't post to Instagram all that often, but when she does, it's great because she has a great sense of humor. Her character's the voice of reason for everybody. She's not in the show so much that you get tired of her. She could probably be in it a little bit more, but because she's not, every time she's in a scene, you're like, oh, something good is going to happen here with Mrs. LaRusso.
Yeah, because she could be secondary, you know, to all the fighting and the drama with the senseis and stuff like that. So, like, when she shows up, it's like you said, it's with a purpose. You know, she's going to, like, lay down the law and try to, like, you know, break something up. Or, you know, the most recent season when Johnny, you know, went on strike at the LaRusso Auto Group. And she's like, get down from the counter. Like, come on, like, let's go talk about it.
Tries to pull his Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
All right. So what's your other ones?
I think we talked about this one on one of the previous podcasts when Kreese was in jail and he had the fight scene and he had been flashing back to when he was younger. And so mm-hmm. in the fight scene, you see the younger actor, the younger Kreese, actually fighting, because obviously Martin Cove, you know, he can't be as much of a badass as he had been, you know, years and years ago. So like the way that they did that, where he was kind of hearkening back to his glory days. And then when he's in the fight, you actually see that from that perspective. I thought that was a nice little touch too. I really liked how they produced that fight scene.
Also, one last shout out, bringing back Jessica Andrews was awesome, and give them credit for doing that, which gives me a question here for you. And we'll this will be the first question of probably a few. We have 10 episodes left. Who do you think has the better chance of being in one of these next 10 episodes out of Hilary Swank, Jaden Smith, or Jackie Chan?
With the movie coming up, I would think they'd want to slip Jackie Chan in there because they might want to tie that all in now mm-hmm. that we know that Ralph Macchio is doing it with him. But I keep hearing the buzz about Hilary Swank, but I don't know how they would get her in. Like, is she just going to pop up at the tournament? Is she going to be, you know, something like happens at the tournament and she shows up to, you know, help them out, bail them out? I really don't know how they fit her in. But then again, you know, they brought Mike Barnes in and they did a great job with him, where he was you know, he's a very flawed character instead of just, you know, immediately making him evil or whatever like that. I don't think we'll see Jaden Smith. I think if anything, it would be Jackie Chan. But with Hilary Swank, you keep hearing the rumors, but I just don't know where they squeeze her in right now.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Will Smith is on every credit as an executive producer, so there could be a little Easter egg there. You're talking about the movie. From what I understand, it's already shot and done, right? They just need to edit it and release it next year. Like, all the filming of the movie is finished.
From what I heard, it was supposed to be out at the end of this year, but then it got pushed up to May, I believe, because they want to finish Cobra Kai. So because of Cobra Kai's delay, they pushed the movie up. But yeah, like you said, I think it's in post-production.
And so do you think that the end of Cobra Kai is going to lead into this movie, or do you think they're slightly different? Like, I'm trying to figure out, are they the same universe or is this a slightly different universe?
Originally, I think they said that the movie was going to be another type of reboot and it was going to have nothing to do with Cobra Kai. But now that they've said Ralph Macchio's in it, I would assume it's going to tie together somehow. And they're not talking like he's just making a cameo or it's like a little Easter egg. They're talking like it's Ralph Macchio and Jackie Chan. Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting because you are tying together, if this is in the Cobra Kai universe, you are tying together the first three films, Cobra Kai, and then the Karate Kid film that Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan were in. And I guess if Hilary Swank is involved at all, you would tie in the next Karate Kid too. So that's kind of interesting. And those guys, the three guys, if anybody can do it, they can do it because done Cobra Kai. So yeah, I'm intrigued. I mean, I there's like such little information about the plot of this film out there. And I know Ralph Macchio has been sort of mums the word on anything, but yeah, I mean, we're talking what, 6 months, 7 months, and this thing's going to be out. So crazy.
And I wonder if that's on purpose too, so as to not spoil anything that we're going to see.
That we're going to see for Cobra Kai
coming up. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the season six kind of main story arcs. But before, just in case people hadn't seen season five in a while, the very end of season five, Daniel defeats Silver in their fight. And the season ends with all of the students leaving Cobra Kai. They play the footage of Silver admitting that he bribed the referee. Or was it that he beat up Stingray? I can't remember. What was the footage at the end of the last episode of season five?
It was the stuff with him and Tori.
Okay, yeah, where he admitted.
Yep.
And then we have Chosen going to the hospital and then Kreese escaping from prison. And so all of those things happen at the end, leading us to the beginning of season six. And again, I just have to repeat this because it's so crazy to think about the ages of these characters. And I mean, Zolo already had sort of had a lead role in a superhero movie between then and that. What did you think of Blue Beetle?
It was pretty good. It was actually one of the better DC movies. The DC cinematic universe, I'm not as high on as the Marvel stuff.
Right.
But yeah, Blue Beetle was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
What the college storyline, which is, you know, these kids going to college and Dimitri wanting to get into MIT, it's an interesting way to bring back Kyler as a sympathetic figure, as somebody who wants to join the frat scene but is being abused, and Miguel finds out, and then so they kind of help Kyler realize that, you know, that he's really not wanted in this frat. They're just kind of making a fool out of him. One of my favorite of the goofy characters. He was the baddie in season one. And by now in season six, he's kind of like a sympathetic. I mean, he's a lug. He's a goofball. He's not a smart kid, but you end up going like, oh, that Kyler kid's not too bad.
Right, 'cause Cobra Kai literally started with him picking on Miguel, and that's what sprung Johnny into action and kind of motivated him to do all this. And then season six, you're having Kyler and Miguel have a heart to heart. And Kyler's like, you know, I missed my chances. You know, I didn't take the shots when I should have taken them. So I got to kind of live with it. But, you know, I'm cool with it. Like, you know, I'll be better now. And, you know, it's like they have you can't even say a begrudging respect, because Miguel was really the one that helped stick up for him.
Yeah. The other storyline around college, well, there's a couple of them. Miguel is trying to get into Stanford. Tori and Robbie are kind of like not that interested in college. Tori believes that because of all the stuff that she's been through, she's probably not gonna look, it's not gonna look so good on her transcripts. But then we have the Dimitri and Eli beef, which is Dimitri desperately wants to get into MIT, and he thought this was Eli's goal too. And Eli was like, I didn't even really apply. And so there's beef between the two of them. You know, their entire relationship on this series has really been about trust and friendship and being honest with each other. And so now in season six, it is essentially the same thing, but now it's around college and not around, you know, one kid all of a sudden is cool and the other is still a nerd. And that's the reason for their beef.
Yeah, they were always very codependent. And then when, you know, Hawk, you know, to use some wrestling terminology, when he went heel, you know, it was pretty much just like, you know, a very defined rivalry. And now you're dealing with them where, you know, they're both good kids. They're both on the side of good, but now they're not getting along. So, you know, their fractured friendship is one of the, you know, the biggest storylines that they're going to have to resolve before this ends. And I'm sure they'll wrap it up just fine. But it's interesting how they're going with going back to my statement earlier about how we have flawed characters. Mm-hmm. It's not that everything's perfect. You know, these kids are really, you know, they're showing these kids and these adults dealing with stuff that's kind of, you know, creating the tension as opposed to just a villain coming at them.
Yeah. And, you know, that is very similar to the reason why this show exists is this flawed relationship between Daniel and Johnny, and that is shown here in season six because they kind of agreed to combine their dojos or their ideas for to kind of team up for this Sekai Taikai tournament that they want the kids involved in, and in putting their teams together, their philosophies are different. And then there's jealousy involved. And then, you know, who do they want to win and become captain? So there's a lot of beef here. And basically by the end of the season, they kind of agree like, okay, we're going to do this tournament together. But when the tournament is over, then we're going to go our separate ways.
And then you have the interjection of Chosen. It was the very first episode where Chosen wanted to fight Johnny. So it's almost like you're getting another Karate Kid franchise dream match there. And then later in the season when Daniel brings Barnes in for some input and Johnny's like, well, you didn't check with me about that one. And, you know, Johnny, as usual, his heart's in the right place, but he gets in over his head. But I think that they work well where they're doing, you know, the good cop, bad cop thing. I think they play off each other well, as opposed to just being all hunky dory, because just their rapport and the way that Daniel's kind of the straight man to all of Johnny's goofiness, I think that's how their chemistry really shines.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
We also get introduced to Kim Sun-young, who was kind of a mythical figure. We go back to Karate Kid 3, Terry Silver saying who he was taught by. And now we actually saw a figure. I don't know how old this man is supposed to be, 150 years old or whatever, but we do get to see him, and he's interacting with Kreese, and he's trying to teach Kreese lessons of what he wants out of Kreese, if Kreese is going to be the one to lead his team into the Sekai Taikai. This character, and I'm kind of wondering, I don't know if the guys, the three guys talked about the idea, but it almost seemed a little too over the top and unrealistic. I don't know, what were we supposed to think with this mythical karate master?
I mean, it feels like they wanted to put like an evil warlord type guy into the show. Like it's too far-fetched, even in this crazy world of Cobra Kai with high school fights and people flying over balconies and stuff like that. It did seem to go a little bit, you know, beyond what we've learned. Cause you know, what was Mr. Miyagi? He was a handyman who was trained in the martial arts, who taught Daniel. You know, even someone over the top like Silver was just, you know, a rich a-hole that, you know, was bought a karate studio. This one felt weird. It was also very silly to me because I don't know if you ever watched Dexter on Showtime. Mm-mm. But the guy that plays this character, he was on Dexter and he was like the goofy like crime scene guy. So it wasn't even like, you know, oh, they put like a martial artist in, they tried to find a role for someone. He's literally just a regular actor that they threw the wig on and threw him in here. So it is a little goofy. It doesn't feel like it totally fits, especially with somebody like Kreese. But I mean, I didn't hate it. It's just a little, it kind of takes you aback when you're watching those scenes.
Yeah, for sure. And that kind of leads into the biggest story of the season, Mr. Miyagi's secrets that he kept from Daniel. And that has Daniel going out of his mind about the why. Like, why didn't he tell me about these things? And in some things to me, I'm like, well, dude, like, he's not your dad. Like, he's not, you know, maybe he's ashamed of some of these things. He wanted to protect you. But Daniel's just like, this is about trust. It doesn't equal out for the teachings and what this thing is about. And he's so befuddled about it. And what do you think some of these secrets might be about? We know that he had, he was arrested, I guess, for assaulting somebody. And he had some relationship with an owner of a boxing gym. And I've seen a bunch of different things about, oh, maybe he was a part of Kim Sung-young's dojo, or maybe he fought in this Sekai Taikai against that dojo, and maybe something happened in that fight that he's ashamed of. Where do you sit with the what if here in this story?
I think as far as like, you know, the supposed crime that had been committed or something, I think we're going to find out that he took the fall for someone, like he protected someone, like it was a selfless act. Like he was trying to like spare someone, you know, getting into trouble, getting arrested, whatever the case may be. This could actually be, you know, going back to the beginning of this conversation, maybe this is how they squeeze Hillary Swank in. Maybe she knows something that Daniel didn't. And that's how they can kind of connect the dots and get her in there.
Maybe she learned it from the monks or something.
Yeah. You know, actually, we're talking about how this guy is like over the top, and I completely forgot all about the monks as we were talking about that.
Well,
so maybe it's not too far.
I mean, it is about. Next. It is the next Karate Kid, which is a goofy movie in its own right. You know, there is that scene where Chosen mentions that his uncle Sato like knew or had a relationship with Kim Sung-young too. So there, and we know Sato and Miyagi were very close. So there's something there where he knows who this guy is, but he did not let us know that in Karate Kid 3 when Terry Silver brings it up. So there's some secrets. Maybe that's why the secrecy is there. Why didn't Miyagi say anything in Karate Kid 3? Well, we have to have a storyline where he was secretive about it for some reason. And that is kind of that's part of the hook for part two. I'm sure we will learn a lot more about this, but it enables Johnny to take a shot at Mr. Miyagi, and which causes Daniel to punch him right in the face.
Again, their fractured relationship, the good cop, bad cop stuff.
All right. So we have this Tori arc. Her and Sam are doing their best to be best pals. And what Johnny realizes is that they are such good friends that it has taken the eye of the tiger out of both of them when it comes to actual fighting. So his idea is that they need to start hating each other so that they can utilize that in their sparring and in their training. And so he arranges a sleepover with Devin. And can you imagine this like 50-year-old dude at a sleepover with three young girls? Not a great look, but
creepy overtones there.
Some creepy overtones, but because he is Johnny, you kind of get it and get why it's maybe not as creepy, but you know, it was there for shits and giggles. And we got to see them. His idea of trying to sabotage them and to put them against each other is to bust out a Ouija board of all things. It is to take Robbie and Miguel's cell phone, though we don't know exactly how he got those cell phones, and to pit them with texting the girls from each other's cell phone. So just, you know, hijinks ensued. And then in the end, the girls were completely fine with each other and apologized for stuff that they were kind of holding back on. And they were happy-go-lucky after that. But for Tori is propositioned in a parking garage by Kreese to come back and join his team. And she does not. But what actually causes her to rethink her position is that her mom dies. And she is going through memories of her mom's advice when she's a little girl about who can help her. And you got to be independent, though you can't be too proud. And the ending scene, the cliffhanger of the entire first season is when they actually do get to Barcelona for the Sekai Taikai. Tori, who had quit, who had run out on Miyagi-Do, shows up on the Cobra Kai side, and now she's got to be on the opposite side of Sam again for them to probably meet in the finals.
And this time it feels reluctant. Like, obviously, like when she walked out, like she didn't have the cocky smirk. You know, she ghosted Robbie. Like, let's not forget they were in a relationship and she just basically, you know, fled the country on him. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play this one out, because like you said, she's fighting for Cobra Kai now, but it doesn't seem like, you know, it's almost a matter of necessity for her because she had no one to take care of her. And Kreese was the closest thing. So they're almost putting her in the Johnny position where Kreese was his father figure. And now that's what she's got. So with Johnny being a girl dad and kind of sticking up for Devin a lot this season, I wonder if they'll lean into him sticking up for Tori or trying to break through to her in the same regard.
This is not a big plot in the story, at least not yet. I'm sure we'll find more. But Devin actually sabotages poor Kenny in this and how they are picking the team to send to Sekai Taikai. And Kenny ends up in an outhouse where he basically craps his pants because she gave him some drink that that people take to help with their digestive system. And so it was almost one of those things where I'm watching this scene and I go, okay, this is a common sort of over the top comedy scene. It doesn't feel like it's the right moment for this over the top someone shitting their pants kind of moment, because instead of it being funny, you feel really bad for Kenny and you feel really bothered with Devin. So I don't like, it was one of those moments where, you know, how sometimes you watch a movie or a show and you go, okay, this turn, this moment, like they completely missed it. Like they didn't, like they missed whatever this thing is. It shouldn't have happened because it kind of ruined the tone. And I first thought about that when I saw the scene, but then I thought, okay, they're going to tell more of this story and this is just the beginning. Where did you sit with this Devin and Kenny situation?
I think that they didn't want to have the relationship with Kenny and Anthony be too much of a carbon copy of what they were doing with Sam and Tori, because you pretty much had the same thing where these guys were the ultimate rivals. They bullied each other. They got into fights with each other. And now everything's supposed to be all cool. So I think they were looking for a way out of that, and throwing Devin in, making her be kind of the monkey wrench in their friendship now. Because Kenny at first too, you know, we started the season with him being reluctant to even get involved with anything. You know, his brother was out of juvie, and it was actually his brother that was like, you know, they could have beat you down a little worse, and they didn't. They didn't take some shots. Maybe you need to go talk to Robbie. So to get Kenny back into it, you start feeling like, okay, like he's a good kid. Like he doesn't have that chip on his shoulder anymore. But now you have to wonder if with what Devin's doing and then with what Kenny's doing, Hawk and Dimitri, you're basically looking at the team falling apart. And is that going to cost them the tournament? Is that going to be their calm before the storm, before they patch everything up? So it could go a lot of different ways. I think to your point, the juxtaposition of that whole thing, because you're watching Dimitri and Eli fall apart in that same race to be able to enter the tournament. So having that little bit of comedy, like that goofiness, it wasn't the time for it. I think that if there was something else as far as like, you know, trying to win, like the competitive spirit, it would have worked better. So I mean, I'll let it see how it plays out. But yeah, I mean, I think they could have gone another route. I think they were just looking for a way to not make it feel like a total copycat of the other situation.
Yeah. So just in case you hadn't watched it, and if you haven't watched it, then you should probably stop listening to this and go watch the season. But basically, Devin gave Kenny like the old joke would be like a chocolate X-lax that they thought was a candy bar, and they just ate the whole thing, and so then they crapped their pants. And so she snuck it in his water and framed Anthony, or Kenny believes it was Anthony who did that. And I think, like, I was trying to think of what other way could they have gotten to the same place. Now, if you're a teenager, crapping your pants in front of other teenagers is probably one of the more horrific things you could ever do, the scariest thing you could ever do that would traumatize you for the rest of your life. But yeah, but I was thinking of like, how else could she have sabotaged him so that she could win and make it and he couldn't? So when you think about it that way, yeah, I mean, unless, you know, you tying his shoelaces together or something that where he falls, but yeah, it was like causing an injury would be really bad too. So yeah, I couldn't think of a way for them to get to that same conclusion.
And Devon's the smart girl too. So you think that maybe like some psychological manipulation would have been more her forte. Like the stuff that we saw where Johnny was sticking up for her because Devon wasn't cutting it and Barnes wasn't really into her. He didn't think she had like the fighting spirit and everything. You could have had Devon kind of do that to Kenny, like, oh, you know, Sensei LaRusso is looking at you this way, and make him believe like, oh, he's favoring his son. You know, these things aren't just coincidences or anything like that. So the whole thing with the penis breath. Because Anthony thought it was protein powder, and he's like, no, it's X-lax or it's a laxative. Like, my stomach's been bothering me or whatever. You know, so I can see why they put that scene in there. Like, obviously they want to set Anthony up for that, but you would think that she's not so, you know, sophomoric to do something like that. It's kind of, it goes against her normal character.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, okay. Now we get to this tournament that is, you know, when you do the All Valley, what's bigger and better? You got to do bigger and better than the All Valley. So, you know, you can kind of end this thing on, you know, winning the, I don't know what would even be comparable, but you know, you win the local tournament, but now you got to go to the worldwide tournament and win this tournament. So the Sekai Taikai is the end game here. It is the tournament that I think, is it a handshake agreement between Cobra Kai and Miyagi-Do? Like, whomever wins, the other group cannot exist anymore. Is that still the storyline here?
Yeah, I think it was just that. That's the challenge that they have to. I mean, again, it goes back to the whole last season with Silver and everything. So Kreese wasn't really privy to all that, but I'm sure it's going to be something. I don't think we've seen the last of Silver. I'm sure he's going to turn up. I think that what's going to happen is we're going to get the next five episodes are going to be the focus on the tournament. Mm-hmm. And then the final five are going to be the fallout and the resolution. I think that's how they're going to break it up.
Now, the Sekai Taikai is the storylines going into this tournament from the Miyagi-Do side. So Miguel, in his attempt to get into Stanford, he falls on the deferred list. Now, that's very successful, by the way, to be on the deferred list at Stanford. But he's heartbroken because that's kind of the dream. And he realizes that, you know, his mom and Robbie's dad, and they have a family, and, you know, he's got to be successful. And the Stanford thing is kind of the way to go. So for him, winning this captaincy to go into the Sekai Taikai was a very big deal. And it was so much of a big deal that it kind of fractured his relationship with Robbie, because Robbie felt like, oh, just because you have these dreams, it doesn't mean that I don't have dreams. And Robbie at this point is the perennial like second place finisher. He's the Daniel Cormier in this scenario here. And so he's now frustrated because Miguel's kind of overlooking him, or Miguel is not really overlooking him as a fighter, but he is overlooking the importance of what it could mean to Robbie. It's like, no, this means more to me than it means to you. And so Robbie actually beats Miguel for the captaincy for Sekai Taikai. And then Sam and Tori fight. Tori shows up really late to their fight to win the captaincy on the girls' side. And the reason why Tori is late is because, as we mentioned, that her mom died. And so she shows up at the end, and she's very aggressive. She's letting her emotions for her mom passing kind of dictate the fight. And there's a little worry about, you know, some of the old things that she was doing that were possibly a little too aggressive. And then as they're fighting and they're building up this fight scene, this is actually probably my favorite scene of part one. It's all in slow motion, the music, the crescendo, and then Amanda gets a text from, I think it's from the nurse, who says that Tori's mom passed away and Daniel has to stop the fight. We got to end this thing. Tori, you're not in your right mind. You need to grieve. We're here for you. And Tori is not in the headspace. The fight was her grieving, and they stopped that for her. And that's when she bails. I thought that was the best moment of the entire season so far.
I would agree. That was awesome. And it goes back to you saying how Amanda is so great as like the voice of reason. You know, the one who's trying to settle all the insanity down. And it's a callback to, it was either what, season one or two, where Amanda helped her out. And that's mm-hmm. why the school actually had Amanda's information. So again, tying something from the past, even if it's the recent past, into something now.
There's also the Amanda conflict, because she wants to help out Tori, but she doesn't want to take away from her daughter's opportunity as well. So she's kind of fighting that battle herself.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. And the Tori's, I was going to say, the Tori Sam relationship, it's like, you know, Tori had the blinders on. She doesn't care that it's Sam. It could have been anybody, Devin, yes. whoever. She's just trying to get that frustration out. And now it seems like, you know, joining Cobra Kai is the necessary evil. But now, will that mean that she's more aggressive, or will she let up if it comes down to them against Miyagi-Do? So they could go a couple of different ways with her. You know, does she break Sam's leg, or does she hesitate and then Cobra Kai gets mad at her and Kreese is like, you know, you're weak, and they kick her out. So we could get back to the infighting on the Cobra Kai side again, too.
So do you have any thoughts on where you want to see this go, as far as who wins the tournament, how they get there? Now, we didn't even mention this, but the group that Kreese is training, and also the granddaughter of Kim Sung-young, I forget her name, Kim Sung-un or something like that. They're training this new batch of Cobra Kai kids, and the main storyline with that group is Kreese saw maybe the more talented fighter in his group, but also the one who couldn't control himself and the one who's kind of acting out a lot. And the star of the camp, the star of their dojo, was more like the person who's kind of the leader and follows all the rules and kind of sets the tone. And Kreese saw in the other kid greatness. And so he kind of sabotaged their relationship and set it up so that this kid could, you know, kind of come out and be the ferocious one. And so that's the Cobra Kai side. So not only are you dealing with the internal Miyagi-Do, but now you also are facing this group of fighters who are kind of built up to be killers. And so if you're right about season five being really about the tournament, like, where do you see this thing going?
I've thought about it, and I could see, I don't know if they would necessarily do this, but you remember the movie Best of the Best with mm-hmm. Eric Roberts? I was thinking about how with Tori on Cobra Kai, like if something happens where like she has to get through to them, like, you know, don't worry about Kreese, like worry about this, that, like we're being misled, fight for yourself, don't fight for him, where Cobra Kai ends up winning, but then there's the show of respect, like they kind of they form a union and like stand up to, you know, with the Kreese, or if Silver comes back, like in those final five episodes. But then on the flip side, you've got all this stuff about college and what it means to stand up for yourself and believe in yourself. So it's like, do you tell that story by having them overcome the adversity, or do you have the final five episodes and the fallout be the adversity that they have to overcome? So I could actually see it going either way. I don't think there's a definitive answer.
Because the entire reason Miyagi-Do is created originally in season two is because the Cobra Kai dojo being back and being the bullies and kind of Kreese being evil. Like, if you have Cobra Kai win, then I sort of feel like Miyagi-Do has to exist just so that Cobra Kai doesn't run over everything. So if they win, like, I would like to see it where Miyagi-Do wins and then Daniel's like, you know, Johnny, this thing is yours. I'm going to sponsor all of this and, you know, have faith in you and trust in you. And I need to take care of my family and all that. So, because this is, what we have to remember is the entire reason Cobra Kai exists is because it is the Johnny hero story in a sense, right? The Johnny being overlooked in the movies, but now from his perspective, how he sees the world. And I would that's how I would like to see it end. But at the same time, I have no idea what these guys are going to do.
Like, I've always had the thought too, like, what was it, season two, when Kreese was kind of pretending to be sick and gained sympathy and stuff like that. I've always had the thought that the end of the series was going to be that Kreese dies. Not that, like, Johnny kills him and we get, like, you know, some type of, like, crazy, you know, martial arts showdown or anything right. But I've always thought that Kreese would die and he would, like, his bedside apology or whatever to Johnny, and he'd say, Cobra Kai dies with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it's kind of like everything's free and clear. And then,
I like that.
You know, whether, you know, Johnny's, you know, doing Miyagi-Do with Daniel, or like you said, Daniel's sponsoring it, but Johnny's like a sensei working with him to some degree, some type of like poetic ending to everything.
You know, you could also do something where, you know, Miyagi-Do does win, but in the end, like you said, Silver comes back. And because we know he is the most insane person on this show, that he goes really evil and he is trying to destroy Johnny, and Kreese eventually does save him, sort of like that, you know, Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, Emperor moment from Return of the Jedi. And Kreese takes it to save Johnny, and then, you know, and then they figure out a way to stop Terry Silver. Maybe that's when Daniel finally comes back or whatever. So there is something there with what you're saying. I think that would be a fantastic way to end. But then again, do you really want to copy? You know, I mean, it's not copying. It's a good way to end the thing. But I think a lot of people go, oh yeah, this reminds me of, like, you know, this movie or whatever.
I mean, I don't think they're too worried about that, because we've seen so much, you know, thrown in so far. But I think that ultimately, you know, like you said, it's the Johnny hero story. But I think ultimately Kreese gets redeemed too, because mm-hmm. they've really laid it on heavy that Johnny Lawrence is John Kreese's biggest weakness. So if something happens where Silver comes back and they try to go after Johnny, or, you know, kidnap the baby, like whatever type of crazy type of thing he can do, I could very easily see Kreese being like, no, like, this isn't going to fly. And you get some type of Kreese-Silver showdown in the final couple of episodes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Now, you know, this middle part of the season, I imagine it will be the most action, because the last five episodes will probably be the most sort of storytelling and wrapping up. But yeah, it's going to be a blast. And the second part, I think, is November 15th. So that's when the next five episodes will drop. And then I think it's sometime in February of 2025 for the final five. So we'll have some stuff to talk about in a couple months here. And when we do get to watch those, to kind of segue around to the next topic, what I wanted to talk to you about. So I think people who know the both of us know that you have a very friendly relationship with the Cena household, Mr. Cena himself. You and your son and your family are close to them, which gives you probably a bit of a closer sort of fandom to John himself, because you know his dad very well, and I know you've met him before as well. And we have this storyline for 2025 that I think is a brilliant idea, for not only for John Cena, but for WWE in general, because they have so many moving pieces and expectations, and Netflix is here, and, you know, they got to keep up this hot streak. And I think this is brilliant to have John Cena have a retirement year. And how do you tell this story? What are the highs and lows of the retirement year for John Cena? What are you thinking about going into his final year in wrestling?
You know, the thing that I thought about the most is what AEW is doing with Danielson now. I thought mm-hmm. you could give John one last run with the belt, and he could be like, look, even if I'm still holding this belt at the end of the year, like, I'm done. And if I lose this belt, like, you know, that's it, folks. And I don't think they go that route now, because I actually think it works better with Danielson, because at least with John, he said it's 2025.
Right.
And that's it. But I still think that you put a belt on him if they want him to win the world title. But I've even thought about, what if he pairs up with someone and wins the tag titles, if he gives somebody the rub somehow? Because I feel like if you have him feuding with, say, like a Carmelo Hayes, you kind of expect him, oh, he's going to put him over. You know, he put over Austin Theory before. But if you link him up with someone and then they win the tag titles, or there's some type of thing where it's them against Judgment Day or them against the Bloodline again, similar to what he did briefly with LA Knight last year. If you do something like that, I think at least one new or modern member of the roster needs to get the rub before he retires. Who that would be, I don't know. I like Carmelo Hayes, so that's kind of why I threw his name out there, if you could link them up somehow. But I think, you know, the goal should be, you know, you can do your, you know, CM Punk match again, you can do your Randy Orton match again, but I think somebody new has to come out of this one with the spotlight on them by the time John retires.
Your comparison to Bryan Danielson is very interesting, because the thing that makes the Bryan Danielson story work, or at least as far as I know, it should work. We don't know what's going to happen yet. There is stakes in every single Bryan Danielson match. Not only the title, which is one thing, but also the idea that he's going to have to retire if he loses. So you have double the stakes in every Bryan Danielson match. And that's the thing that I think is interesting about the Cena thing, because if he doesn't have the title, how do you give him stakes for the importance of these matches? Because he could have a match, like you said, with Randy Orton or CM Punk, but what happens if he loses? Like, I don't want to see a lovable loser John Cena retirement run. I want to see John Cena competitively in storylines and in big pieces of WWE's 2025. And how do you tell this story of this guy who you want to be one of the most memorable characters of all time, but he's going to have this, he's probably going to have the instinct of putting people over. I actually want to see him win these matches so that he can build up to this title run, that he can break that fictional Flair record, and he can have that as his going out present. And then last pay-per-view of the year, or whatever one that they decide is the last pay-per-view of the year, then he does lose that match. And maybe it's a little predictable that he does, but it could be whomever that next star is that you want to be in the mix. Then that is the guy. But I worry a little bit that because WWE is so hot right now, they kind of go, oh, you know, we can pretty much do anything and it's going to work. I actually really want to see a good story for John this in this upcoming next year, because he's important and it'll draw and it'll help them with the hot streak that they're currently on. I don't want to see them just kind of throw this one away.
I think the biggest story to tell with him would be with Gunther. I think you get John on Raw and you have them feud, and, you know, Gunther's very articulate. You know, he comes out there and he can cut a good promo. You could do something where Gunther's like, you know, your celebrity means nothing to me. You need to get to the back of the line. You're not going to walk onto Raw and try to get a shot at my belt. And then that way you can kind of give a reason why John's fighting with, you know, Ashanti the Adonis or Cedric Alexander or a guy like at that level. And you could have Gunther say, if you beat these guys, then you can fight me. And it's almost like, you know, started from the bottom, now we're here. He's working his way up the ladder to Gunther. And so we talked about how we know 2025, that's it. If you have him beat Gunther at the end of the year, say he beats him at like Survivor Series, and then you're like, oh, well, he's going to lose the belt in December. You could actually have him retain in December, put the belt up for grabs in the Royal Rumble, have him retire as champion, and then you start 2026 with, you know, like the 1992 Royal Rumble, the belt's up for grabs, and you give that pay-per-view more stakes. So you can actually kind of play off John's run, and then you're starting off that year hot because now you don't know who's going to be the champion.
I think 2016 Royal Rumble as well, the belt was up for grabs, and that one is a little less memorable, by the way. I was able to ask Ric Flair when Dave and I interviewed him. I was like, you know, as this match is going on, like, do you realize like how this match is going to be the one that is everyone compares the Royal Rumble to. It's like, nope, just it was just a match. It was just, you know, so many good guys in that match. And it's like the most, it's like one of the most memorable matches for people our age is that Royal Rumble match. So I actually like that idea, but I, it also made me think, do you think he's going to be in the 2025 Royal Rumble? Because your idea of having him win matches, WWE doesn't necessarily have rankings. They have a lot of like number one contender tournaments and these wacky, like what they're doing with the Intercontinental tournament right now. It's like, oh, you're going to be in a three-way to get to a four-way to get to a singles match. And I'm like, okay, you guys are just doing too much. But he that is one way, is he could literally win the Royal Rumble to earn that title shot for WrestleMania, which is one way to do it. I don't know if it's the best way to do it, but it is a way to do it. I kind of hope he is in that Rumble, because if he doesn't win it, there's an immediate reaction to him getting kicked out. It's a, it's an important person to get taken out of that match.
So if someone's going to take him out of the Rumble, it's, I think it's got to be by shenanigans. I don't think it could just be, you know, Drew McIntyre clotheslining him over the top or something like that. And, you know, McIntyre, you know, I mentioned that name off the top of my head, having him, maybe, you know, going back to the 92 Rumble, if you have McIntyre be the Hogan to Cena's Sid, and, you know, McIntyre gets eliminated and pulls him out, or if you have, you know, someone who's just a total shithead like Dominic Mysterio in the Judgment Day, and then you kind of give Cena, I guess, the guaranteed win for WrestleMania. You kind of set him on that path, and then after he gets that grudge out of the way. But it's got to be somebody who is like, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to retire you early. You're not making it till the end of the year. So, you know, you've got the Judgment Day where it's like the gang effort. I'd keep him away from the Bloodline. Don't mix him in with any of that stuff. He'd get overshadowed by all that stuff, I think, which is crazy to say about someone like John Cena. Mm-hmm. But I think you've got Roman, you've got Cody, you've got The Rock. Keep him separate from them. That's why I say stick him on Raw.
Yeah, The Rock Rock bottomed him at WrestleMania. I thought John cracked his head against the mat on that bump too. It was like, oh my God. John's run outside of the neck injury, he was pretty healthy for his career. I'm sure he had other injuries that I'm forgetting, but the neck injury was the one that I remember
in late 07.
Okay. So that is the thing that I think I worry about the most. Like when you project a year and you kind of have things laid out for the entire year, his health is like the one thing that could screw this entire idea up. It was almost like when he said what the idea was, my first instinct was, oh man, I wish you wouldn't have said it, and I wish you would have just done it, because now if you do get hurt, then it kind of ruins the plan.
Right. And it's like flying him out to Rota, just cut a promo or do a run-in or something like that. Like if you want to see him on this tour, you want to actually see him in action. Yeah. And that was part of the reason why I had like the idea that you link him up with someone in a tag team, at least for a little while, because then he can just kind of do the short bursts, you know, hit the FU, tap the guy out, you know, do the signature spots. And then you do the singles matches here and there. But then for those last, you know, 4 to 6 months, then you really hit it into overdrive and you can do the title run or the big grudge matches. I'm also wondering how they get to him and Cody, because I'm sure Cody wants that match.
Yeah.
But then you've got babyface versus babyface, unless you use that to turn Cody Rhodes heel.
Well, they did the babyface with Kevin Owens, which was a really good match, though. I also did not like that story. We got to get it at some point. It's like yesterday's hero versus today's hero, which is really cool.
We get Austin versus Cena?
Have you seen Austin's comments of late?
I mean, I've seen him saying, you know, hey, Las Vegas, I live far, you know, not too far away. It seems like he wants to do something, but if he's going to do something, I'm sure he wants to do more than just come out and stun Grayson Waller.
Yeah. I think if Austin was going to do another match, it would have to be against somebody that he knows is like excellent, right? Because that was the Kevin Owens thing. I think when we first thought, who wants to see Kevin Owens in Austin? There may have been some people who had a dream match, but then what you realize is you're like, oh, they just trust Kevin Owens to be able to A, hold up his end of the bargain to kind of sell the thing, because I think we got like one promo from Austin, and then B, the actual wrestling part of it, because that's Austin's biggest fear, is just not having a good match. And so Kevin Owens was actually the perfect person to do that. So Cena's a little clunky in that last run, and I wonder if Austin would be interested in that for that reason. Those, I think Austin would be interested in seeing a Punk match for sure, because Punk, as long as Punk is healthy, Punk would really, really be careful with him. And Punk, you know, Punk would have to eat that stunner, brother. But, you know, Cena would have less of a problem losing than Punk would, I think. So that would make that easier to do. But, you know, if Austin's going to do a match, it's got to be the perfect scenario. It's got to be the right amount of money. I was telling people this, and I've said it a few times on air, but I knew Austin was not going to be at that WrestleMania because it was The Rock's show. And he only wants to be there if he is going to be able to not be second string there. Now, the interesting thing is, for this upcoming WrestleMania, like, The Rock doesn't have to be part of both nights. That he could just be one and Austin could be the other, and that's how you have your legends. I just don't think that, unless they paid him an ungodly sum of money, that Austin would be second fiddle to The Rock in the build. Now, in that spot, he hits the stunner on Rock. It's one of the greatest moments in WrestleMania history, so I do wish that he would have done it. I just never expected him to, so... That would have been an all-timer. I would have just jumped out of my seat, and I almost never watch wrestling like that anymore because I have to watch it through such a critical lens. But Austin and Cena, a lot of people would go crazy for that, just the idea of it. So if that is one of the matches, then, you know, I've never heard Cena ask for it, so I don't know if that's like a dream match for him, but both of those guys understand business better than just about anybody. So that, yeah, I could see that being one that maybe if they could do it, that it would be on their wish list.
One problem with it, to your point about wanting to have like the best match possible, is you can't really do smoke and mirrors in it because it's a babyface match. So mm-hmm. You can't have the brawling at ringside, throwing them over the announce table. You can't have the stuff that they got away with Kevin Owens. So if he is going to do a match, if it's not Punk, then they might be better served having somebody like Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, mm-hmm. someone who can bump around and do stuff like that. But just, you know, that's part of, you know, how for years people thought we were going to get Austin versus Hogan and we never got it.
Yeah.
And I mean, the closest thing that you would get to that nowadays would be to do Austin versus Cena. So it's like, do you go with the dream match for the sake of doing the dream match because it's John's last run and it's the last time that Steve's going to do something? Or do you kind of keep it separate and have them, you know, night one, night two, or, you know, backing each other up on the same card?
Yeah, they got a lot of options, man. And, you know, crossing fingers for them that Rock or Jacob Fatu or Cody and all these guys just stay absolutely healthy. Though I do worry all this traveling that these guys do these days on these shows. I kind of worry about that from like a let's keep everyone healthy and get them in bubble wrap perspective. But they have so many options. It's almost like, how do they miss? Like, I don't think they can miss on a lot of this stuff. I'm like, you know, politics can be politics. And when you are on fire and when so many guys are over, there could be some interesting scenarios. So I don't envy Triple H's position in all of this, but hey, that's his job, man. This is what he wanted. So, and he's been doing a pretty darn good job of it. I'm excited though. I'm excited for John. You know, it's kind of cool when you're our age, you basically saw his entire career. You saw him coming. Old fans of Wrestling Observer Live on IATA would have heard interviews with John before anyone would have ever seen him in the ring, unless you were in Southern California. And, UPW. You know, I remember Dave telling me one time, and I think he may have even said this on the air before, but, you know, he was such a big proponent of John early in John's career. And I'm sure, you know, who just other people he had been talking to in the business about John. And I know John was very thankful of all of Dave's praise, but when you become like the top guy in WWE, it's not like you can also be really good friends with Dave Meltzer. It doesn't work that way. But I remember, I believe it was in Santa Clara for WrestleMania 31. Dave was at that press conference, and I think John walked by him and went up to him and just basically like, I never forgot what you did, and shook his hand, and then moved on to do his business. But, you know, it's not good for John to basically put his arm around Dave like an old buddy, you know, back then. So I still thought that was pretty cool. Wrestling business is very interesting when it comes to that. All right.
WrestleMania 31, you mentioned WrestleMania 31. So the time that we had met him, summer of 2014, after a house show, and you know how it goes, you know, wrestlers do not want to talk about wrestling. They want to talk about anything else once they're out of the ring. But, you know, during our conversation at dinner that night, we were talking about stuff and just kind of randomly threw it out there. He's like, what do you think of Rusev? And we had a conversation about, you know, do you like him as a character? Like, you know, and I had compared him to Umaga. I'm like, he feels like Umaga, like a big guy that can move, like kind of can work a blend of styles. And then John was like, oh, Umaga was magic. He's like, those matches, like, you know, he was kind of, you know, getting nostalgic about those. But I remember having that conversation, and then that WrestleMania that you just mentioned, that was his WrestleMania opponent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was almost like he was doing his market research to see, like, you know, should this be the guy that I go after? Should this be the guy that they link me up with?
No, that's really cool. Yeah. No, that's a great story. So as we end this, I'm just interested in, where are you with wrestling right now? Like, you, I know you watch a lot of it through the eyes of your young son. But where are you with kind of the competition and the discourse around the competition? And, you know, if Tony Khan gets this television deal, which we think, you know, internet's going to go crazy. But WWE's so hot that it really doesn't matter, at least to those WWE fans. But what is your fandom like right now?
I mean, it's still everywhere. I just took Zach to Monday Night Raw the other night. It was here in Providence. So we were there live, the show with Uncle Howdy versus Chad Gable, which, you know, that felt like an Attitude Era Raw, because, you know, they're so hot that they're ending with that as a main event.
Yeah.
You're not getting like a Gunther or Randy Orton, anything like that. So it's just cool to see them kind of mixing up the roster a little bit in that regard. But, you know, we watch AEW every week. He actually just had several of his friends over for All In the other day. So we had like an All In party because it was on in the afternoon. So he had a bunch of friends over because he's starting to get a couple of his friends into wrestling. Oh. So sometimes when they come over, they'll play WWE 2K, or he'll show them like an old match and stuff like that. You know, New Japan, I'll watch the shows. I'll watch New Japan Strong. I'm not as deeply into it. I just feel like New Japan is just kind of cold right now. Yeah, it's not sucking me in the way it used to. I'll actually probably see more TNA than I see New Japan at this point. But definitely all the weekly stuff for WWE and AEW, you know, Zach and I are watching it together. And then, you know, we watch a lot of older stuff too. He's got a playlist on YouTube with a lot of old matches. So sometimes we'll just kind of be hanging out after dinner and he'll put it on and it'll be, you know, Dustin Rhodes versus Rick Rude from Saturday night in 1993, you know, just stuff like that. And then we'll talk about it. Yeah. You know, just like, he loves watching old stuff. You know, I was telling you earlier about how he's very into NBA, but he'll watch, you know, the Bulls versus the Sonics from 96 because he wants to learn about Sean Kemp.
The game is so different from that time frame to now too. It's like almost a different sport when you watch how slow those games are.
But then with, you know, you mentioned, you know, like, you know, wrestling Twitter and the discourse. And of course, you know, I'm on the Observer board all the time. And I feel like I'm one of the few that tries to kind of bring humor to the board, because you've got like people snipping at each other, and then the mods have to step in, and then Dave will post something and they'll be snippy at Dave. And I'm just like, all right, guys, let's talk about this and try to like give them a detour. And then being on Twitter, it's kind of twofold, because, you know, I'll be on my personal Twitter, and then I'll be on the Figures Toy Company Twitter, you know, promoting stuff or whatever. So I'm seeing everything. And it's just like, I have my criticisms of the product just like anybody.
Yeah.
But I think the negativity is amplified. And I think that's the same with pretty much life in general these days. You know, you give everybody a microphone and they're going to just, you know, complain to the sky, shout to the sky. I watch Raw. There's stuff I love and don't love. I watch AEW. There's stuff I love and don't love. You know, I could disagree with something. You know, everybody's all about Mercedes Moné. I'm not leaning that way. We'll say that because I don't want to start any discourse on your show. but it's just, you know, it is what it is. You just got to kind of tune out the noise and like what you like. You know, I kind of think of it the way that I watch movies. You know, I like Academy Award winners and I like stuff that was at the bottom of the bin in the video store. And I can enjoy both of them equally. You know, is one logically better than the other? Yeah, sure. But I can like both of them equally. Same thing with wrestling.
I know it's probably impossible to do this because, like I said, you are watching a lot of this through the eyes of a 9-year-old. And this is a precious time because I can remember, you know, my kids, they kind of were out of it. Probably, I would say maybe a little bit older than Zach, but some stuff could kind of get them back in every once in a while. And some of it would have to do with their friends too, because we would always have pay-per-view events over at the house and with people, and they would invite their friends over too. So maybe a little bit older than Zach when they finally were like, okay, I'm not really watching this, but it came back in waves. Like when my oldest went to college, and like there was like a WWE sort of fandom in the dorm. And so he kind of got back into it a little bit. I remember they drove because they went to school in Tucson, Arizona, and the Royal Rumble that year was at the baseball park in Phoenix. So they, you know, got the most nosebleediest seats you could ever get. And they went to go see because, you know, they had a few people who enjoyed it. But yeah, man, this is the time because there's going to be a time where, wrestling and sports too kind of take a little bit of a backseat to other stuff, and this is like a fantastic time for Zach to be into it because the products are both, you know, you have good stuff, really good stuff on both shows, and it's exciting and there's stuff happening, and because of the competition we kind of have like wrestling almost big shows every other weekend. So it's kind of an event like every other weekend. So this is a fun time. And I think it's a good time for Zach to be in it as well. Just it's a really good time for wrestling fans, I think.
Yeah. Even this past year, you know, last Christmas, you know, what do you want to do for Christmas? And, you know, now that he's getting older, it's kind of less about the toys. You know, he wants like his video games, but he's, you know, like a video game and comic book kid. But we're like, okay, like let's think about experiences. And so when COVID happened in early 2020, that was supposed to be the Tampa WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to work at WrestleCon. We were going to have a Figures Toy Company table at WrestleCon, and we were going to stay with my boss and take Zach. And unfortunately, you know, that didn't happen for the obvious reason. So when they announced the Royal Rumble for Tampa, I reached out to my boss. I said, hey, do you mind if we come down in January? He's like, absolutely not. You're welcome down here whenever you want to. So Zach's Christmas gift was that we took him to the Royal Rumble. And it was funny because he's so used to getting, you know, some pretty decent seats when we go up here, you know, just smaller arenas in Rhode Island. I'm like, look, we're going to a stadium. You're going to be a little bit further away from the ring, but you just have to enjoy the atmosphere and enjoy mm-hmm. being there. And, you know, we were, you know, mid with the ring, but we were so far back, and that kid could have been front row in his eyes. He just loved being there. So I think he wants to make it a yearly tradition where we take some type of wrestling trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very hyped about Vegas WrestleMania. I would love to go because I haven't seen you guys in person since the New York WrestleMania. So we're talking about 5 years now, going on 6 years. Ago. Yeah. So we're hoping to do that. It's not a guarantee, depending on where the tickets are at and everything. I do have a hotel room booked, so we are at least 50% there. But I told him, you know, even if we don't do Mania, maybe we'll do Money in the Bank. Maybe we'll mm-hmm. do SummerSlam. You know, we could do anything. And he's like really high on doing that stuff. Like that's how deep he still is into it. You know, the one, like he's not really playing with his superhero figures anymore, but he'll still bust out his wrestling figures. You know, the other day he was excited because he found Wheeler Yuta. It's like, so he definitely still has some enthusiasm for the product. But it's funny because school just started this week. And when we were at Raw the other night, he ran into one of his friends at school, and it's not one of the kids that he would normally see during the summer or anything. And so I was talking to the dad, and he's like, oh, it's his first show. He watched a couple of the PLEs with me over the summer. So I told him I'd get him tickets. And that kid is in Zach's class now. So they've only had school for 2 days. And Zach has said both days, the kid, like during their free time, was like, who's this guy? Tell me about this guy. tell me about this. Because Zach's like the wrestling savant.
Yeah, and Zach's the perfect kid to ask those questions to.
Exactly. So now he's getting kids into it. And then he's like, oh, I saw a kid at school that had a, you know, Cody Rhodes shirt on. So I asked him about it. So it's almost like he's kind of forming this little wrestling clique. One of his friends that was here for All In, like, loved Luchasaurus, like the mask, like the whole persona and stuff like that. And he's like, does he have a toy? And Zach's like, yeah, I have his action figure upstairs. And his friend said, can you text my mom and ask her to look that up on Amazon for me? So he's just excited because there's other kids getting into it. Because for so long, he was the kid that loved it, but no one else really followed it. And now that it's getting hot, he's kind of on the ground floor. And he can be the one that's like, hey, we're watching it at my house this week. Or, hey, I can tell you like what guys to look for if you want them on your Christmas list and stuff. So he loves it because it gives him something else to talk about with everybody. Because, you know, no one his age that I know is into basketball at the level that he is, you know, definitely not with knowing names like Sean Kemp and Muggsy Bogues and all these old school guys for sure.
You probably have a lot of old basketball cards that you can just let him rip through too. Cause back then when those players were hot, a lot of basketball cards from when we were younger, there was like a wave, like a lot of late 80s stuff. Is worth a lot, but then Hoops comes in and Skybox, and they just oversaturate the hell out of the market. So there's a lot of, I'm sure you have a lot of those cards where you're like, ah, here, you can have these.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
We've been clearing some stuff out of my parents' house lately, and I've still got like binders and like the long boxes of the cards, and he was going through them, and I had, you know, the Skybox Shaq and all that stuff. The two cards that he was the most hyped to find, he found a Topps Del Curry gold card.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember the gold cards that used to be like the random inserts or whatever. And then, remember the show Hang Time used to come on TMBC? Mm-hmm. He found a Reggie Theus, and he remembers that he's Coach Fuller on Hang Time. And of course, being my son, he loves all those TV shows now, the TNBC shows. So he's like, hey, it's Coach Fuller from Hang Time. So he was all happy that he found Curry's dad. And the coach from the show that he likes, like the Jordan, the Pippen, like put those aside. These are the two cards I was happy that I found.
Awesome. All right, man. Why don't you plug whatever you want? I always love talking about your company because of just being in the figures business. So yeah, just let people know where they can find you and you know about your situation with the toy company.
Awesome. Thanks. So you guys have heard me mention it. It's figurestoycompany.com. At one point, we were making all the replica belts for the World of Wrestling, but right now we focus on the legends and rising stars of wrestling. So we did the first ever action figures for people like Jeff Cobb. We did the Young Bucks back in the day before AEW started.
Those Young Bucks figures got to be worth a lot of money.
You know, I haven't checked eBay. Some of the figures have gone up, especially the ones that were when we were doing ROH. Mm. I've seen a couple of the ROH ones, like PCO and like the first Adam Cole going for like $80. Like, wow. It's crazy. You know, the figure game is like the card game. Yeah. There's ebbs and flows. But right now, the biggest project that we had just done recently was we did the first ever Midnight Express anniversary set. Jim Cornette sold the 4-pack on his site. We do have figures available separately on our website, but Dennis Condrey, Bobby Eaton, Stan Lane, all together as action figures. Cool. They're done exclusively by our company. And then we actually just shifted our figure model, our figure tooling, to be more in line with the current day WWE figures. So we started doing referees, commentators, announcers, security staff, those supplementary characters, if you're doing figure photography or dioramas. So that's at figurestoycompany.com. You can also check us out on Twitter, X, at figurestoyco. You can look up the company name on Facebook and Instagram. You can follow me on X at Zach Malibu. You'll also see links to all my writing at bulletproofaction.com, where I do podcasts and reviews of older and newer action movies. Whole lot of content on there. I've been writing for that site. It's going on 8 years now, and we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. So if you're ever wanting to read up on action movies, please do check out bulletproofaction.com. My column is No Surrender Cinema, under my real name of Chris DiPetrillo.
Can WWE make Midnight Express and Cornette figures, or is it only you guys?
It's only us. Jim refuses to sign a Legends deal to this point. And Condrey, Eaton, and Lane, Eaton obviously had passed away, but they all signed exclusive deals with us. Now, there have been situations where someone will sign with us and then eventually WWE will sign them.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not forego our contracts, because we have had situations. It was actually with AJ Styles, where he had signed with WWE and they had started putting his figure into production while we still had him under contract. Mm-hmm. So an arrangement had to be made with Mattel. Now, on the flip side of that, we did that with AJ, you know, directly with AJ for our independent line. When we had the Ring of Honor license, that's when Steen got signed for NXT, and we had his figure coming out. Legally, we could still release it because it was in production, but Ring of Honor could only do figures of people that were under contract at the time.
Ah, interesting.
So when Steen came out, and I know for a fact from sources that this went all the way up to Vinnie Mac himself, there was a lot of unhappiness because the Steen figure was coming out, and the big selling point for years was come to WWE, get an action figure, get merchandised.
Right.
And if you recall, that was when they were telling anyone, if you have any type of outside deal with anything, we're not going to look at you for a contract.
Mm.
And so when that whole thing happened, the Steen figure had come out, and they were trying to kind of rile up the discourse by saying, oh, they're trying to circumvent the process. They're going to do a Claudio Castagnoli ROH figure, a Brian Danielson ROH figure, while we have them as Cesaro and Daniel Bryan. Well, legally, no, we can't do that. You know, you have them under contract. We can't just take their likeness. That's,
if you guys would have been able to do that, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, it would have been, the, you know, because then you would have just had all these companies signing like, oh, you know, Raven, you were in TNA at one point. I'll just make a Raven figure if, like,
right.
And these guys would get like nothing for it. It would have been awesome, but, you know, we had to follow the letter of the law. But just, you know, being able to meet and work with so many people in the industry, you know, I got hired at this job on my 19th birthday, and 3 months later, I was backstage at WCW because we were making the WCW belts at the time. So I'm very grateful for it. And that's why, going back to taking Zach on trips and stuff like that, I had a lot of great experiences. Like, you know, I could have marked out 10 times over for some of the stuff that I've encountered, but I'm just glad that I got to, you know, live in the moment and appreciate it. So mm-hmm. getting him to a show, even getting him to something as simple as going to an indie show. So a couple of times he's worked Mr. Cena's merch booth and sold his goods for him. And they're just, you know, like, you know, regular East Coast indie guys. You know, he's probably seen them once or twice on YouTube, but he's the star of the show because he's like the cool little kid at the merch booth. So anything that makes him happy makes me happy. So I just love that I can give him these experiences thanks to what I do. Because if I didn't have this job, I probably would have never gotten in good with Mr. Cena, who has basically adopted me as family to mm-hmm. this point. You know, I've told you a lot of stories. I'm very grateful for a lot of the stuff that he's done. And, you know, he treats Zach like gold. So
yeah,
you couldn't ask
awesome.
For a better person to befriend.
I've had to sell some Brian Alvarez -5 stars shirts, at indie shows before while he was in the ring. So
did he make you wear one? Did you have to model it while you
sold No, I didn't. But, you know, he sold a couple. There's a few. But hey, man, this is awesome. I say let's do it again when part two of season six drops, and we get to check it out and kind of talk about where that story is going. So I think that'll be fun, and then we'll be able to do it at the end as well when they finish out the story, and maybe even again when the new Karate Kid movie comes on. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, anytime.
All right, man.
You want to talk, man, hit me up.
All right, for Chris DePetrillo, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.